From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 28th day of March, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at agmarket.net out of New Market, Indiana. We'll hear from Dan O'Brien today at Kansas State University Extension. He always discusses the agricultural energies with us, and we'll explain how corn oil has been added to the calculations that make up ethanol and the ethanol plant products, including DDGs, so ethanol, DDGs, and corn oil now. And then as we close out our time together, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Don Dane. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we'll do all of that on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn for the day settled at $6.47 and a quarter. It was down a penny. July at $6.29 and a half, a quarter lower. December corn up 2 1/2 at $5.72 and a quarter. Soybeans, May contract at $14.67 and three quarters, 25.5 cents higher. July up 23 and three quarters at $14.44 and a half, and November at $13.75 per bushel, 15.25 cents higher. Bean meal futures up $11.90 at $457. The bean oil at $55.05, up 50 cents for the day. Soft red winter wheat in the July harvest month up to $7.11.5. The settlement price, the hard red July at $8.59 and a quarter, up 11 and three quarters of a cent. Live cattle futures at $158.90, 2.5 higher. Feeders at 57.5 cents lower, settled at $200.80, and lean hogs at $92.72 and a half, down 35 cents. Crude oil for the day at $73.30 a barrel. That's up 49 cents. And the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.67 and 9 cents per gallon, up 2 4 cents per gallon for the day. Wayne Nelson of AgMarket.net is now here to explain what happened at the CME Group in Chicago. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for being with us. What's the explanation today? Lots of volatility. The soybeans managed to rally.
They sure did. You know, of course, the obvious is we've got a report on Friday. And, of course, it's a wild card. I mean, this is one that generally nobody's quite on the numbers in that way. And there's a few of the expectations for some lower number by quite a bit. So that's one of the things keeping the volatility in it. But, you know, the beans, technically, it's a technically driven rally. They've seen some good shortcoming, and, you know, buying begets buying, and we go on that way. So this meal market was very strong today, and that's where a lot of the strength came from. And there was rumors that one of the major importers is selling bean puts in the May-August timeframe, and selling quite a few of them, I guess. So with the idea that they're willing to buy it if it goes down lower, and if it doesn't, well, they just put some money in their pocket. So that's one of the things. And of course, we were helped a little bit by the wheat today, because the wheat ratings were really pretty poor in America on this in the U.S. I mean, we're still sort of dry and, you know, some real low ratings. But and also, you know, let's look at what Russia's doing right now. They sort of put the rumor out there that they were maybe going to stop their wheat sales for a while to try to let the price go back up so the interior farmer can do a little better.
I do have some questions about the soybeans just a bit, and bean meal in particular, because Argentina is set up to export bean meal. It's one of the few places across the planet that really does. Many places will export whole soybeans, the U.S. among those, but the primary coming out of Argentina is bean meal. They'll have to, I would think, import soybeans from Brazil in order to crush them to keep their piece of the global export pie for bean meal. How much of a play does that have over the growing or marketing year, do you suppose? How important is it really in the grand scheme of things?
Well, as we look at things, we've been rallying for quite a while, then we've had the big sell-off, but a lot of that, of course, was just Argentina being so short on their crop and not having that. So, you know, you're looking at what could be exported to China, to anybody else in the world, out of Brazil. Basically, we're going to see a lot of those beans. They're just going to go on down to Argentina and get crushed to get the meal up. And I think they haven't been producing quite as much meal. That's another reason the meal market jumped today. We saw some numbers that had a little higher hog numbers in China. We also saw some the hog numbers may be sustained a little better in the U.S. also. So, you know, there's going to be some demand for some meal along the way. And we've been using a lot of wheat for feed wheat at these lower prices that Russia basically in their they had a great crop. And also they need money and they're selling their wheat crop pretty cheap. And they went into a lot of areas that way. And, you know, as wheat's a little higher protein than just corn with it. So they weren't needing quite as much meal. And if that market could get shut off with the way that Russia is talking about maybe cutting the shipping with Ukraine could be shut off a month sooner, or three, you know, a few months sooner, and that's going on that way. So, and we're also looking for maybe a few less crops getting planted in the Ukraine this year. So that's what we're looking at in part of it, Todd.
And we also, from time to time, we'll talk about the broader perspective of economies across the planet and what that really means. There have been some hints this week that the U.S., the American population, is feeling a bit better. I was surprised about this when I heard it, about the economy going forward. We're certainly a year past the beginning of the Ukraine-Russia war, as you just mentioned, its impact. Has the economy begun to feel a little more robust, and how important is the trade war that continues with China?
You know, all of those are good things, Todd. I mean, basically along the way, we're getting a few more people back to work. We're still sort of wondering where all the people went to, but we are seeing some stuff going back and production going on, and we are looking at better employment, lower unemployment numbers. So that's good, and that's what's going on here. We're continuing to see Americans spend money. The amount of money being spent is still staying way up there. Now, we do have, some problems with banks. Deutsche Bank was mentioned as something, some place that could have a problem. That's a tremendously big bank in Germany that way, and we're looking at it. But, not going into recession as we come out of all this is a very important thing to not go into. And a lot of times when the feds raise rates like this, it causes a recession, and then going into it's a lot harder to climb out of.
Well, we'll still have to wait and see, as things have not developed yet. And I'll call you back and we'll find out more. Hey, thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He is with AgMarket.net in New Market, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, a large coalition of agriculture and business groups asked President Joe Biden to intervene in the West Coast port labor negotiations. In a letter signed by the groups, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, they say it is imperative that the administration work with the parties to quickly reach a new agreement and ensure there is no disruption to port operations. The coalition previously voiced concerns when the labor contract expired in July last year. Negotiations have been ongoing for over 10 months with little to no progress towards a new long-term agreement, according to the letter. The letter further states the only way to resolve these issues is for the parties to remain at the bargaining table and actually negotiate. The effort is to encourage the administration to provide any and all support to the parties in their negotiations to reach a final agreement between the International Longshore and Warehouse Union and the Pacific Maritime Association. Well, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is calling on Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack to continue blocking Paraguay from importing beef to the United States. The effort is in response to the Department of Agriculture releasing a proposed rule that would grant access to Paraguayan beef imports. NCBA Executive Director of Government Affairs Kent Baucus says Paraguay has a history of outbreaks of foot and mouth disease, and we cannot jeopardize the safety of U.S. consumers and the health of our U.S. cattle herd. Baucus says the United States has the highest animal health and food safety standards in the world. Well, the U.S. Grains Council says the 2022-23 sorghum quality report for the fourth year in a row found U.S. sorghum was, on average, graded above the necessary requirements for U.S. number one certification. Released last week, the report provides international customers and other interested parties accurate, unbiased information about the 2022-23 U.S. sorghum crop. USGC Chairman Josh Miller says, "We hope this year's report helps give our valued trade partners even more confidence in the continued reliability and quality of U.S. sorghum." By the way, sorghum is one of the crops USDA surveyed farmers about for this Friday's upcoming USDA prospective plantings figures. The number of sorghum acres in the nation very well may have an impact on the total number of corn acres the U.S. is expected to plant this season. And finally today, something from right here on this campus. Researchers from the Agroecosystem Sustainability Center, or ASC, at the University of Illinois can detect soil tillage practices from space, weaving together data from ground images, airborne sensors, and satellites. Now, with a grant from the USDA's National Institute for Food and Agriculture, they will expand on that work to produce more accurate estimates of tillage effects on corn and soybean yield, greenhouse gas emissions, nitrogen loss, and changes in soil organic carbon. Leading the project is Ben Ping, senior research scientist at ASC and research assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources in the Agricultural College. The new project, which pulls data from satellites and simulates thousands of fields simultaneously via supercomputers, will allow a more holistic view of the effects of tillage across a large region. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On Tuesdays, we always take a look at the agricultural energies. Dan O'Brien is here from Kansas State University. He's written an article, of course, for the agmanager.info website that belongs to KSU and joins us now to discuss it and what he sees in ethanol. Hi, thanks, Dan, for being with us. Start in on what this article tells us, these sets of PowerPoints about the ethanol industry and its health at the moment.
Well, we kind of measure health by profitability or lack thereof, and by the time you look at some recent marginal increases in ethanol prices, some declines that have happened in corn input prices, then you end up and for the month of March so far, for about the first 3 weeks in the month, on average overall, about three or four, you're looking at about a 2 cent loss, which in the broader sweep of ethanol profitability or losses over time, that's in essence break even, and you'll have some variability in different plant locations and such. So really about break even, slight loss in February for plants, at least in Iowa, you were looking at about a 17 cent per gallon loss. So a little bit better this week, but again, corn prices have softened and ethanol gone up a little bit. You and I were talking before we got on air about it's not so much. Probably it's not so much where we stand right now, but where will we be in the summer? Will we have increases in motor fuel prices, and will that drag ethanol upwards with it? And so much depends this summer on that happening. And yes, there's some softness in the economy. We have seen gasoline prices. I think the latest gasoline prices in the U.S. are, on average, about $3.53, and we probably live in areas where we've seen at four, we've seen right here locally we're close to three, but the U.S. average about $3.53, and that's down from about $5.80, $5.90 that happened at one time in the last two or three years. So some declines, likely economically driven, and so the health of the industry seeming to be in pretty good shape. We're showing about 202 ethanol plants. In the U.S. that are functioning, at least with the latest information from the Renewable Fuels Association. So, and ethanol production capacity, at least the capacity that we could use if we utilize it, if we don't have some temporarily go into repair times, all of that, or maintenance times, is about 17.5, 17.9 billion gallons of production capacity. And we have been using about 86-87% of that. And again, just as you and I have talked before, there's a whole range of brand new plants, of large plants, of small plants all over the U.S. And they all kind of react differently. So I think a lot will depend on this summer. Anticipation going forward is that we'll have a decent corn crop. And as we talked about, the corn prices have softened. There's not a lot of fear at this time of a major shortfall in U.S. corn bushels produced. If that happens, then that's probably a positive factor. Again, moderate prices for ethanol. The risk out there would be that if we don't get that type of a large crop, moderate price scenario, and ethanol prices go up, then what happens with, corn prices go up? Corn prices go higher, and you are balancing that with some economic weakness and get motor fuel prices, then you wonder about that'd be the situation that could be tough on the ethanol industry in 2023 going forward.
So when you think about ethanol usage across both the export and the domestic side, where do we stand in comparison year over year or to previous years? And are the expectations for this year to be a growth year, a settle back year by the time we get to the end of the marketing year or not?
Well, I think from what we can see, it's absent uncertainty about the economy, it's probably thought to be a growth year, at least as capacity is going. You see the listed plant capacity inching higher, so that's an indication of economic optimism on the part of the ethanol industry. Excuse me, but again, so much is going to depend on the health of the U.S. economy, on demand holding up, and then us seeing where the balance of those forces, again, moderating ethanol prices, uncertain corn prices, as that comes into play. We'll see how that affects profitability, and from there, then you have profit-driven managers making decisions on whether to operate or not. So I guess we'll see.
How does the export trade look for the year?
We, in terms of U.S. Ethanol exports, show that we have virtually zero imports, but exports are running at about 5 to 7% of U.S. production. So it's always interesting to watch that. It's kind of a herky-jerky number as you track that over time. But again, right now we're 7 to 8% at times, and in the strongest of times for exports, in say 2020 or so, we got up to over 15% of U.S. ethanol production being exported. That happened again in 2018, but now we're at a more moderate level. It doesn't often get below about 4 or 5%. So again, we're sort of in the middle zone right now, and seeing where we're we talk about that. I know if this was a discussion about corn or wheat, we'd say, gosh, the high value of the U.S. dollar is sure affecting us. Well, that could be happening here too, I don't doubt. But I think there are broader issues afoot, and I know your good colleagues there at Illinois can look at that and have no doubt look at that also. We wonder about what Brazil is going to do with their ethanol production, what position they would like to have in those international markets, and how we compete with them or draw upon them as a customer or not. So, or they for us. They toward us. So I think those issues are out there and still to be addressed, I guess.
And finally, I want to talk just a little bit about corn oil. I believe it's now being used in the calculations as it's related to ethanol. We always think of soybeans and soybean products as the whole soybean bean meal and then bean oil. And now we have, for corn, ethanol DDGs and corn oil.
Yes, and back in September, October of last year, corn oil was running at about 73 cents a pound, got up to 77 cents a pound in November, and then again, December, January, about 68, 69, 63 in February, and now this month, we dropped into a range from 51 to 57. So, product that can be sold, source of revenue for ethanol. If we had, I would venture to say, if we had corn oil prices were now, instead of in the 50s, if they were back in the 70s or 80s, then most recent projection or estimate of slight losses would probably be positive return. So we have seen some softening in the corn oil market, particularly here in March, and I guess it's showing on the bottom line of the profitability of these plants. For a good long time, we did not, at least I was not accounting for corn oil in profitability estimates. And here you've got, by the time you put corn oil revenues onto a per gallon basis, well, it's about 12 to 13 cents, at least in the month of March here, had been as much as 14, 15, 16, 17 in recent months going back to September. So it's a significant factor, and the proactive plants are using it and giving themselves a profitability advantage.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Dan O'Brien. He is with Kansas State University. Find him on Twitter at KSU Grains. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don DeHeese. Day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, thanks for being with us. What do you see in the March weather?
The weather pattern is best described as fairly typical for late March across the United States. We're going to see the early part of the forecast period over the next two or three days, continuing with the cooler than average conditions across the Corn Belt. These will be with us probably right on into the day on Thursday before warmer air is pushed out ahead of a California storm that is going to lead to a big warm-up. As we get into Friday and as we get into Saturday, temperatures will rebound sharply. Problem is, those warmer temperatures will collide with part of that California storm moving in as we get on into late Friday and into the start of the weekend. This is going to lead to a very good chance of what could be a severe weather outbreak across portions of the Corn Belt and Midwest. Severe thunderstorm activity, possibly hail, heavy rain, and tornado activity in parts of the Midwest and Central and Eastern Corn Belt could roll in Friday into Saturday. Now, on the northern side of the storm system, it's going to be plenty cold enough that we will see significant snows across the northern tier.
Where exactly?
The Dakotas, Minnesota, even Iowa, north of I-80, and across Wisconsin and into Michigan, we'll see snowfall late Friday and the Saturday as that system rolls on through. Then temperatures are going to do their normal ups and downs as we go into early April.
Well, Don, that sounds like a fairly typical spring weather pattern with some rainfall and a lot of ups and downs in the temperatures.
And although these storm systems keep coming off the West Coast and across the United States, we're still looking at very dry conditions in the winter wheat country of southwest Kansas and the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles and southeast Colorado. And at least through the weekend, those areas not expected to have much in the way of any significant precipitation chances.
Hey, thanks much, Don. Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.